Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Jennifer Adams, baby lit author looking at classics in an entirely different way. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 370 of the podcast with Jennifer Adams. Jennifer writes board books, and if anyone has a command of editing, selective word choice, and articulation of theme, it's Jennifer. Her hugely popular Babylit series with Alison Oliver has tackled classics such as Pride and Prejudice, A Midsummer Night's Dream, and Dracula. Her new My Little City series with Chronicle is illustrated by friend of the show Greg Pizzoli and explores sights to see throughout iconic cities, all the while playing with rhyme, pattern, and juxtaposition. Enjoy the listen. Here's episode number 370 of the podcast with Jennifer Adams. Welcome to the podcast, Jennifer Adams. I'm glad I get to talk to you tonight.
I'm glad to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Jen, I'm like giddy with how to talk to you. as I said to your colleague, Alison Oliver, ages ago when she was on talking about your Babylit series, you sort of have this special place in my heart because of those books coming along as I was raising children. And so they became a really special part of our home library and of our, you know, when you read board books to kids, you read them like multiple times a day for months on end. So thank you for the craft and care you put into writing those board books so that I could read them 50 times and still want to read them a 51st time.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad.
Yeah, and also thank you for reading all of the classic novels and finding ways to look at themes like shapes and colors and emotions, and also give me a really tight recap of the book.
Right. I mean, that's actually been one of the funnest parts, is like either rereading my favorite classics or reading some for the first time that I never had read before. And, you know, almost invariably, it's like, oh, yeah, there's a reason this is a classic. Like, it's really good, you know? So, like, I feel like my research has just been so much pleasure just to go back and read great stuff. I mean, not everyone, like Les Mis, did not make me happy. That was, like, way too long. And I found that Frankenstein, I do not like. But besides from those two, I would say it's been great. I have loved it.
You're also then reading, I mean, much like watching some old movies, you're reading books that have informed the way we write and the way we tell stories. And that's sort of a cool concept too. So that's neat that you've been influenced in that way, as you've also been reading with an eye for how to communicate this to our pre-readers, to our very, very young, as well as the adults that read the board books too. I'm realizing as I'm saying this that some of these books are some of my favorite books, and so to be able to honor and respect the source material as you're also finding a way to
introduce it to our youngest readers is something that I'm sure is something you keep in mind as you work.
Yeah, thank you. If we do it successfully, it's, first for the babies, but then secondly for that adult audience to give you guys something too. So
why write for babies? I think that you're the first name that I started to know by name as this is a person who has made a career out of writing for our youngest readers. And that's something I really respect from you, because as a librarian, you just opened my eyes to something new like that. I think I'm so accustomed to seeing, or maybe all of us are accustomed to walking into a bookstore. And when we find board books, it most often is picture book classics that are retrimmed and republished as board books. And that's fine and great. But I used to read for the State Book Award. And when they threw me a book shower instead of a baby shower, they threw me a book shower for when my son was about to be born. Mm-hmm. And there were so many books in there that I not only were classics, but a handful of others that introduced me to this wonderful world of writing for the very young with that intention in mind. So how did you get into that world?
Well, it's actually so fun because, like you said, a lot of times, or maybe most, well, a lot of times the books are not written for that audience originally, but are adapted. So it was really fun to start out with the idea of making a book for like 0 to 3 years old and then making it with the artist. So I worked really closely with Allison Oliver. And so you're kind of like making where the art and the text are so interconnected. And you're making it that way from the beginning and how the words fit on the page and everything. So that's really fun because that's one thing that I love about picture books too, is just how the art and the design is so important and integral. And then kind of also just being able to write, it's like really just poetry, really. I mean, condensing something down so tightly and making every word count. And with the new books, My Little Cities, with Greg Pizzoli, those actually are poems. And so I kind of love creating something for that age group in that market. And I felt like there's a lot more people doing it now, but there was a lot, when we started Baby Lit, there was a lot of space to publish into, I felt like. There was a lot of wide open area that hadn't been explored, and it was really kind of fun.
That's neat to see a need like that and then respond to it by your own writing. I don't think I connected, or maybe I'm just not remembering, that you and Allison started off doing this together, that you approached this as a collaboration and working hand in hand to make the books what you ultimately made them. How many Baby Lit books ultimately came out? Because you published your final book. Am I right in that?
Not yet. So there's 26 books out right now, which I continue to think is totally insane.
I think it's totally insane. The amount of space, can we just point out, Ms. Adams, the amount of shelf space you take up, I mean, it's awesome.
That's okay. So I have a shelf in my living room, and it has like a little nook, and that's where I put them, and as they fill up, and when my friends come over, they're like, you're going to have to stop. Like that, it's going to reach the edge of that nook, and then that's going to be the sign that you can't do anymore. Giving me a hard time. So we have at least 4 more coming out. We have, I'm done, but Allison, and well, for in the fall, we have The Nutcracker and Anne of Green Gables. And those are at the printer right now. And then the following year, Allison's illustrating a couple that I don't think have been announced yet. So that will be 30 that I've written.
Wow. And you're doing, it's about 4 a year. Is that what I'm counting?
Yeah. It's like 2 a season. Yeah. Since like 2011. So we never thought it would go this long. I thought like, 4 books are like, if it's really successful, maybe we'll do 6 and that'll be so fun. But it's been so fun picking which ones to do. And it gets harder each mm-hmm. time. Cause I don't want to just start recycling or doing the same thing. And I want to be like, oh, here's another counting book or whatever. So I really try to pair the kind of primer like thoughtfully figure out what makes sense with the original text, but then it also has to be something that is appealing to babies, you know? So it gets trickier as we go along, but I think it also makes us be more creative, and some fun stuff has come out of that.
And I think Allison has such beautiful design too. I would want to just keep writing just to make her keep doing cool illustrations.
Right?
There's some that, I mean, gosh, the standout ones for me have been, like, Les Mis was such a beautiful design, but even going back to her work in Alice in Wonderland, those colors were so beautiful. And the Wuthering Heights, how graphically strong that red, it was just,
Yeah, she's so great. And, like, Jabberwocky, she actually got an art show just on the art for that. So we worked together to, like, design pieces for a gallery in Salt Lake City, and she flew out, and like I kind of got to figure out like how where the stuff would hang on the wall space, and then to see her art blown up really big and framed, you know, with the little white tag that says what it is, you know, it looked so beautiful, and she actually had a sold out show with her art on the first day. Grandma came and bought the whole thing for her grandkids nursery. So
oh my
it was pretty
goodness
cool.
gracious, that's amazing. Yeah.
It was, I think her art is just it's so good. And, people that know children's books realize like some of the best art's being done in picture books and children's books, but,
it is. And
yeah.
You know, that brings us to the My Little Cities series that you're doing with Greg, because, I've had him on a number of times here before and have revered him for how talented he is in, communicating what he does with, you know, often 3-4 colors by limiting himself in palette and in shapes. So it wasn't surprising to me, I guess is the way I should say it, when I got these books and they were executed so well. But
it was
so exciting too. I mean, my word, like, so your text is such a fun tour around the city. In this case, we have New York and London out. But the way that your poetic text, your rhyming text, is sort of calling us to look up and down at the big things and the small things and the crowded places and the quiet places, I was really impressed with how your, not only the rhyme that fit there, but also knowing the selection of locations that you would have to tour through in order to get, I guess the contrast is the word I'm looking for, not the opposite. The contrast was something that I knew was intentional, but was also done really, really well. And I was going to say the image of the London Eye at the end, the London lights up so high. It's like, oh my, I could see. I mean, you're working with people that are making art that belongs on walls of bedrooms and belongs in places where people respect how beautiful art is in children's books, in the way that we say often that this is the first chance these children have to really hold and be close to art, to real beautiful art, and in this case to put it in their mouth and,
right,
put it upside down and stick it on the cat and whatever.
No, it's so good. I mean, I feel incredibly fortunate to work with Greg too. I mean, he's just so talented, and just felt like he was like a perfect, you know, we're both agented by Steve Malk, and he paired us together, and we pitched it as a, you know, with sample illustrations, and pitched it as both of us working on it as a team. And it's just been so fun and really relaxed, because sometimes it can be really stressful to work on books and editing and, you know, figuring out how the art and the text and, you know, everybody has their opinions. And in this case, our editor, Taylor Norman at Chronicle is just
fantastic.
Oh,
of course it was Taylor. And oh my gosh.
So good. And Greg was so easy, and it was just fun because everybody was just had fun. I mean, it was relaxed, and we all like had input, and everybody had ideas that made it better. And it was just kind of this ideal collaboration. It was really great.
When it's easy that way, I mean, it's not easy. The writing is hard. There are challenges, but when you see things pulled off that way, that that, as you're saying, feel easy like that. That's such a beautiful thing, because it just means there's harmony. It's all working. And here I am sitting thinking I can sort of nonchalantly act like I don't know who Steve is because he's mentioned by, I don't know Steve's client list, but I think I'm coming to know him because of the roster of the podcast and going like, oh, you're this person, you're with Greg. He's represented by Steve. Any chance you know Steve? And here you are like, oh yeah, Steve's also my agent. Yeah. It's just fun to see that he has an eye.
Is amazing.
And even just to know that is a role of agents too, of having that eye of who of their clients might be able to do something beautiful together. I know Steve very well for, I mean, he's not only that, he's been on the podcast, but I also know him for the way that he's brought his clients together to work together and to see those beautiful books that result. So I shouldn't be surprised.
He does have a great vision for pairing people and for seeing like the long term of what books would be good and why, and kind of pushing us to do better work. And I feel really fortunate to work with him for sure.
I keep flipping through, which is even louder now, flipping through your books than it is flipping through pages of picture books. But I keep flipping through the text, hoping to be able to share something. But there's all these different contrasts in both London and New York that I want to share. And then I want to ask you about process, if that's okay. Because figuring out how you approached touring us around these cities is something that has been on my mind a lot. I love in New York that we're starting, I can just read the text, building high, building low, moving fast, moving slow. And here we have the boat, the ferry bringing us past the Statue of Liberty. And then the ones I really loved here, this pairing in particular, listen quiet, listen loud, were something that to see theater and the way that we're using that sense, and then to be in Broadway and the way that we're using that sense. I just, there were moments like that, Jen, that I could sit here and read your books to you and be like, can you believe that this is something that was written that's amazing? Do you know how cool you are, Jen? No, I could see I'm having a meta moment where I'm realizing that I'm geeking out. It's just something that I know takes work and takes thought to make it look this easy and to make it look this effortless. So would you mind just taking a moment to sort of walk me through what did the planning out of My Little Cities, New York, or of London, whichever one you want to share, what did the planning out of one of those books look like for you?
Yeah, for sure. So I did New York first. So I started just wanting the simple verbs. I wanted like the action, and then I decided I liked the idea of doing kind of those opposites. So I made, you know, rhyming couplets, but then I wanted, you know, like the pattern of rhyme too. So it took some crafting to make it work. And then when I had text that I was excited about, then I kind of also had like a big list of New York highlights that I thought were important that needed to be touched on, and kind of figured out which ways, you know, which building or which activity or place or, you know, iconic thing could be paired. And so I did make illustration notes or suggestions with each line. So I felt like that we covered, like we hit all the highlights, you know, I mean, you can't hit them all, but I wanted to hit a bunch of important highlights for the city. So I submitted it like that. And then in both in the editing process and in Greg's process, there were a couple times where Taylor was like, you know, I think we need to add this, like a Yankee Stadium. Like I didn't put sports in. like, no, we really kind of need that then. I'm like, okay. So we took out probably some museum or something. I don't remember. And then, and also on Greg's side, there were a couple of times where he's like, oh, you know, like, I think this would be a really cool visual, or I would really like to include such and such building or whatever. And so, you know, we were all like, yeah, that makes it better. So some of those initial, not a lot, but some of those initial ideas of what would be illustrated changed. And I think it made it really well-rounded. And, you know, Greg really wanted to be sure to include some architecture drawings. He was really excited about being able to do some cool buildings and not just, you know, people or whatever. So I thought that looked really great, what he did with that. And so that was kind of the process of how they came together. And then I wrote London, and then we have Paris and San Francisco coming out in the fall. And so I kind of had a pattern established of like the opposite and the rhyming. And again, like the farther you go in, the more creative you have to be, because you don't want to repeat. So right. You've got to think of, you know, new verbs and new opposites, and still kind of capture the feeling of the city. And we did have people from, there were different editors and people from kind of the city. So we wanted it, I wanted it to feel good for tourists, but I also wanted it to feel good, like for someone that was from London, that they would feel like, yeah, this is London, or like, yeah, this is San Francisco. And so that was an element we looked at too in the editing. I think that's about it. Oh, and then we added that spread at the back that kind of gives like a little summary of which each site is, you know.
It's so. Sort of the greatest thing that you're the first series of board books that I know of that have back matter,
right?
it's perfect. But you have the back matter of the 10 different places that we visited, and some great descriptions of them, like a 3 or 4 sentence description in some cases of Central Park and Times Square and the New York Public Library and things like that. But it's back matter in a board book. It's perfect.
It's kind of funny. I mean, those were kind of tricky to write. Like, I mean, just like figuring out, like, Broadway was when I was a kid. It was like trying to explain, like condense down what that is in a way that makes sense for a really little kid. And it's still interesting. Like it took a lot of research and work to write those couple of sentences for each site, but it was really fun.
I can't imagine through that. But I'm also thinking ahead of the other cities that you're doing and thinking about the way you're pairing the adjectives and the way you're pairing the adverbs, in that same way that you and Allison have been approaching different themes, as we were saying, like sounds and flowers and different kinds of things like that, to be able to look at what are opposites. It makes me think of that great Sesame Street skit with Grover singing about being near and far and all of that. But but you're right that you can't do that every time. It can't just be big building, small building, loud city, quiet city. So being able to challenge yourself, I think that's probably one of those things that makes it good, is that you're giving yourself that restraint. You're limiting yourself to new ideas. We have to have new ideas, not repeating the ideas. And so I think that is part of what's driving your creativity and probably part of what makes them so effective.
Thanks. Yeah. It's fun. It is fun to do.
Can I, here's my book pitch for if Taylor listens to this episode. I would love for her to take this idea and remix it, because it's going to be horrible coming out of me. But to have the two board, I'm just laughing at the idea. Sorry. This is me cracking myself up. It's clearly late at night. Had to have two board books of yours come out at the same time, but have one be like a wonderful, like, metropolitan city, and have the other one just be like a podunk town that nobody's heard of, and be able to compare the two board books together, but have it just be like some random town, like that some small population of people in the country will be like, oh my word, that's our town. They wrote a board book about our little town. It is my little city. No, but it's great that in this way that you're taking children and adults around the world to see these sites that they've seen. And to wherever you end up venturing, if you're looking at the largest cities in the world. I know that that means we're going to be going to different countries too, and maybe in some cases places where English isn't the first language spoken. And just the notion of what it means to explore big cities is an interesting concept, because you're showing us also the spirit of the city, the heart of the city, the things that the people that live there and people that visit there identify with, and the places that they would say you have to visit if you're going to this place. This is something that we as people of this city love and think of as part of our own. So the way that you're respecting the city in that way as you're doing this, I think is also doing a really neat thing. So as much as I kid about doing a small town, I think you have a big challenge on your shoulders. And the way you're offering readers, old and young, something new with these books, I think is something that's really good.
Oh, thank you.
It's not easy, but man, to have Greg also doing the designs, so one of the spots you talk about in New York, I don't think I'm spoiling things in a board book series because the children won't be listening to this and understanding that I'm spoiling it to them. Babies, cover your ears. I'm going to spoiler alert, babies. But I liked little nods like in New York, you talk about the subway. Moving fast is the subway. And I like that in Greg's design of the text that he incorporates the lettering that we see in the subway lettering and the A train and all that. In New York, and there's things like that that he's picking up on the scene and mimicking it in the text design, and in that way the words are telling the story.
The way he treated the type differently on each page, and like the hand lettering, and like making the type fit the illustration. He's just so good. He just did such a great job.
Everything about it. It's fun. So your world, Jen, writing for babies. Can I ask, because I'm a school librarian, right? So I've got the K-5 crowd down. I can picture what that is, and I feel very comfortable in them. And we do a story time every week with we call them our owlettes, our pre-school age children, because we're the Duckett's Lane owls. So all the kids that are too young to go to our school yet are owlettes. And the public library comes out sometimes, and I do story time sometimes. And to see the youngest readers and pre-readers come in is special. But then it brings up in my mind what, after doing like some 30 books now that you've done, you must be being invited to bookstores and maybe to school visits. Maybe you have like preschool visits or something. Can I ask what that side of life is like for you?
Yeah. You know, I haven't done a lot of school visits.
You got to do a preschool tour. I'm doing a daycare tour. That'd be amazing.
We do. So I live near the King's English Independent Bookstore. And in fact, I work there like one day a week as a bookseller, which is really fun. But we have story time every Friday and Saturday. And it's usually like babies up to 5-year-olds. And so when I've been doing book launches there, which is really fun. And our storyteller there, I mean, it's so short, right? Like it can't be the whole, you know, you're like, thanks for coming. It was like 20 seconds. So he's done like themes. So we did Princess, you know, Princess, Little Princess. So he read a bunch of princess books, and then he read that one at the end. And, you know, we had like tiaras for the little kids, and some of them dressed up as princesses because they put out the invitation a week ahead of what the story time theme will be or whatever. And it is like so satisfying to see little babies with your book. I mean, that's like when you worry about all the stress and the deadlines and the contracts, and you know, when you see that, you're like, oh, this is why I'm doing, you know, this is why I'm making these books. It's so heartening. I had one mom told me that her daughter's first word was horses because of the Pride and Prejudice baby lit.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Oh my gosh.
I believe that.
Those little moments with the, and also babies are the best fan base, right? Because they they can't write you any rude emails. They're always happy, you know. They can't tell you if they don't like your book. So
I think for my money, you might be writing for one of the best audiences, the ones that the importance, how much we emphasize the importance of reading to children before they can read, of reading to them often, of building those habits, and to know that you're providing new material for not only those babies to read and look at and be reading with their eyes, be interpreting colors and patterns and contrast and things like that. And that also is, you know, the great work of the illustrators you work with. But the way that your work, Jen, influences parents, I think, is huge. Because as I said, bringing it back to that book shower that they threw for me, I think so often we reach for books that we grew up with or were read to us as a young child. So we're talking like Corduroy and Very Hungry Caterpillar and Goodnight Moon and mm-hmm. those books, which are classics for good reason. But here you are working with that entry point level parents and some grandparents in that case too, and just other friends that are shopping for baby showers and things. And you are helping to show them what powerful and beautiful communication tools and works of art these books can be for babies, for 0 to 3 year olds, as you're saying. And that is a huge task to carry, and one you do so effectively, and just with such love. Every single book, you're not dialing in a thing, girl. You're like rocking everything you do. You probably have, like, I'm sure it's not just me in the Jen Addams fan club that like wants to have all the books and have them all look on my shelf, like your shelf at your house where everything's gonna fall over your.
Yeah, it is. I do have a lot of people even tell me, like, I have a set for my babies that they can chew on and play with, and then I have my own set, you know, right. that I keep for myself. So that makes me happy that I'm able to reach that second audience, because we really tried to make them kind of like have that second layer.
Yeah.
Like, I always try to appeal first to the babies because that's the primary audience, and I think it has to work for them most importantly. And I think it'd be easy to err on the side of just like appealing to the parents. But after I do the foundation for the little ones, then we like to put, you know, that added layer and fun things for the adults to be able to look at and respond to, or sometimes little inside jokes or whatever, so that it's fun for them to read it over and over.
Yeah.
And people just also have such... You know, I mean, it's just, I mean, I'm just lucky because, you know, people have such strong feelings for, like, you know, they love Pride and Prejudice. They love, you know, Wuthering Heights. And so it's such a kind of personal, nostalgic little love letter for these classics that we all love and revere. So that's kind of nice to do for that, too.
But you're also, I mean, you're not shying away from playing with the things that people love when you're talking about cities like New York and London and San Francisco. All the people that are living there or have roots there, I'm sure, are holding up your books and looking at the way that you're touching on these places that resonate with other people as much as they do and are part of their identity as much as they are. So it's that thoughtfulness and consideration that is just, I mean, it's treating you and then the work that you're producing so well. So I'm just so grateful that you're doing it and that you are who you are, that you have this passion for writing for babies and that you just keep delivering on it. I hope you just continue to find those voices and those stories to share, because it's wonderful. I think we need shelves and shelves of books by Jennifer Addams because we keep making babies, so you guys keep making books.
Well, that's so kind. Thank you so much.
I don't know where I was going with that. Sorry. I just had to end with babies are coming, right?
It's definitely a renewable market, right?
Renewable market. Ooh, you've got a phrase for it. Renewable market. I love that. Way to take it to business. It's something that it's hard for me to wrap my brain around being approaching writing in that way of putting so many constraints on because you're connecting with someone who is at that place of looking at contrast and looking at basics, but also you approaching it with a sense of respect and sophistication. So I'll say it one more time. Your books are beautiful. They're works of art. They're fantastic. And I'm grateful that they're on shelves everywhere and that babies are eating them everywhere.
Thank you so much.
All right. So I'm going to give you last word. I certainly have gone on and on, and will continue to do so long after we end Skype. But, I want to give you a chance to speak to, well, in this case, perhaps directly to parents and to these babies that are growing up with your books and becoming readers themselves. So I'll say it this way. I'll visit tomorrow. I'll be at my school with a library full of children who also have siblings that are much, much younger and just learning how to read. And I would love to know, Jen, if there's a message that I can bring to them from you.
So I would say to say make art and be kind.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Tom Booth visits to share Don't Blink, his debut picture book as both author and illustrator. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtimes a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.